asset protection price of our own chair of Canada and Missouri, Representative Mike Hawk, Representative Warren Gillum, Representative Brad Hopkins, Representative Tiffany Christie, and myself, all together, Representative Harry Dunn. We are going to conduct business. Before we begin, I need a little more silence on your cell phones. Today, our remote recording secretary is Kristen McCormick. And Carson Walters is our LLM moderator assisting with taking teleconference and support. Thank you both. Today we will consider one amendment to House Bill 132, School Apprenticeship Programs and Tax Credits, and take action on the bill. After that, we will have a first reading of Representative Jack's House Bill 164, Early Education Programs and Reading and Virtual Education, followed by a first hearing of the Governor's House Bill 114. Education and Supplemental Loan Programs. First up, Council 132. Now, before the committee is reading second to House Bill 132, Labor and Commerce, you have one amendment, labeled W5, you will call Amendment 1, to be offered by Representative Story. Representative Story.
Consultation with the university. And so I looked through the entire in terms of looking through their interest in the history of the room. Thank you. venture cancer. Now, the compromise that we propose here would remove the language from that section, so we take out that section, substitute section 3 of it, and remove language, substitute language to the adjacent statute, which is ES 1441. Some papers might be familiar with that statute. That is where the University of Minnesota annually presents a lot of work with regards to taxation procurement, protection, and training. And the compromise language we proposed would call on the University of Minnesota to conduct annually a similar matter to present to this committee of the legislature about the work that we are doing in collaboration with the Department of Labor and the Department of Career and Technical Education. So what the amendment does is substitute instead of making the core duties of the Board of Regents, which is a fairly monumental task, for the release language instead, in the adjacent statute, that language where we would come back to this committee and explain about a new way to explain progress that we're making in the area of career and technical education.
Sparrow. Kim Brown, I am the Healthy Committee at the proposed committee sent to you for Asbill 164, or board number 32-0731-1-I.
Thank you, I'm the director of our assistant discussion. Representative Tappan and staff, please introduce yourself. Come forward and put yourselves on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Staff has taken it to committee a giant step, a viral step in our
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our representative is Tuck, for its South Central Anchorage, also known as the Durham District, here in this district 23. And joining me is Senator Tom Ricketts, who's here today.
Senator, I'm very sure that today kind of
Yes, please. Yes, we have not seen very exciting retrievers in our district, but I'm going to say
yes. Yes, we will. There's no staff at the
time.
Yes, yes.
Good morning. My name is Lucy Kent, and staff at the Northridge. And just to kind of start here, we took over a meeting to the summary of two things, which is analysis of what's in the CS.
Let's walk through the bill first. The changes, since we haven't seen the original bill, if there are multiple of them. So, if you want to tell us why we have changes before ever seeing the original bill. So, thank you.
So, I'm going to be staff to Senator Brevich. The CS Bill Committee is a companion bill to the Senate Bill 111. This is to allow the committee's both House and Senate to hear the savings in our legislation. To provide an analysis of what's in the CS before you, I'm going to talk about the particular large budgets just briefly. We have time for questions and also opportunity to go through the particular policy section of the Senate House. So, the very first big policy bucket is the military early education programs. We'll frame these programs in sections 2 through 4, sections 7 through 10, sections 13 through 17, sections 20 through 22, section 25, section 29. There are repeater clauses in sections 39, 40, and 45. And you'll also see some of the building language and additional language on effective date in sections 34, 46, and 47. The voluntary early education programs direct DEA to approve and supervise existing, high quality, locally designed, and culturally responsive early education programs in local school districts. Students approved early education programs will report on the average daily membership count and include in the district's recommendation formula. These sections also direct DEA to offer the parents' teachers program and demonstrate the program's efficacy. These sections also provide for school districts who do not have existing high quality early education programs. These directives provide a time-limited grant to help the school district design and develop a district program. These sections also demand and include that data be collected under the long-term early education programs and the parents as teachers, and ensure that information is reported to the legislature in their annual report. And at the conclusion of the program, there will be a comprehensive report provided to the 38th Alaska State Legislature. All of these sections are repealed on June 30th, 2034. The next big policy bucket is the reading programs and the Department Reading Program. These are in sections 5 through 6, 13, 18 through 19, 23, 29 through 32, 34, 35, 37. The repealer clauses are on section 40. There is also applicability language in sections 42 to 45. These policies direct you to establish a culturally responsive reading program and support school districts in implementation. School districts must offer individual reading intervention services for K-12 studies for the leaders. At the beginning of the year, students will be assessed, and those students who are identifying struggling leaders will receive individualized reading and peer services. Included in these types of provisions, to ensure parents or guardians or family members are involved and notified, and also that students who are struggling to lead are provided additional classroom support and school support outside of the day, school day. These centers also establish a statewide reading program which strives to provide intensive support to less than 25 bizarre school districts serving K-3 students. Data collected in these sections and recommendations from stakeholder groups will be included in a comprehensive report that will be presented to the 38th Alaska State Legislature. All of these sections are revealed on K-3 and K-34. The last wild corporate in this particular for the legislation is the Virtual Education Consortium, which directs the DEED to establish Virtual Education Consortium in collaboration with school districts. This is also repealed on June 30, 2024. The sections involving Virtual Education Consortium are sections 21, 36, and 40 through 41. There are other sections including this bill that do not pertain to these particular policy areas. The first is section 24. This amends Alaska Statute 1417.15 to encourage school districts to engage in cooperative agreements to reduce administrative costs. Sections 27 and 28 amends Alaska Statute 1417.505 to increase the unreserved fund balance of school and territory during the fiscal year. And Section 33 amends Alaska Statute 1420.020 and directs the state school board to accept and establish passing tools and teaching competencies. That concludes the analysis of what is included in the CS before you.
Hospital 64, Hospital 111, which are now all done, are under result of years of work and in many ways, decades of work to expand our education opportunities in Alaska and our focus on reading. The overarching goal of this bill is really to empower parents, to empower teachers, and students to increase reading proficiency early in a child's learning career. We know that if a child learns to read, then they can read to learn. And they will learn a lot easier or a lot faster through their education career. I first heard that from you, Madam Chair, that phrase. And reading proficiency is the key driver of later academic success. Because if you can't learn to read, and once you learn to read, you can learn to do math, you can learn to do physics, you can learn to do science, you can learn history, you can learn philosophy, and you can learn about other cultures. So what does this board do? It really has an emphasis on reading by grade 3 to establish a state-wide, mostly expensive reading program for students in grades 3 through 3 statewide. It implements proven practices by requiring evidence-based techniques, including incorporating early childhood education systems. It provides meaningful resources to local school districts. It puts a priority on low-performing schools first. The Department of Education and Development will support the lowest performing 25% of our school districts. They focus on proper training for our teachers. The requirement school districts offer individual reading intervention services for struggling leaders. And the bill also requires the Department of Education and Development to report back to the legislature the progress made by each school towards including reading intervention programs. Said this morning, Madam Chair, I saw the headline on the headline, Prince Louis Smiles. And Precious first day of nursery school pictures ahead of his third birthday. And that's Prince William and Kate Middleton's child. And I thought to myself this morning, looking at that, wouldn't that be grant that every child on Housebook can have that same opportunity in early education, because the wealthy, the well-to-do, know the importance of early education, of the advantages of a child's brain as it develops. It develops by the age of 3, 80% of the development takes place. And so, this bill helps a lot to get there. There's a lot of great parts of this bill. One of my favorite parts is the guarantee teachers program. We just don't get it now, sorry. But the fact is, it is one of the most cost effective ways of developing early, or developing their early and delivering early education to very small communities, very, with geographically very remote from one another. And pre-K involvement, we know, is key to academic success of children. This is why I really appreciate this book. It does build those communities. It does build interactions between students and officials and parents. And it also helps us recognize any pre-K development delays that may happen early on. And we know that if you put those delays, those development problems, that we can fix those more effectively when you teach early. And one of the things this bill does too is it no longer allows districts to hold back children without consultation and permission from the parents. It also requires documentation reports of who and why they're being held back to the Department of Education and Familia for tracking. And so this bill does now focus on teaching and reading, on learning to read, so that for future generations can read to learn. Thank you.
Extended the process to our urban areas and found the same needs. In particular, early
did 50 correctly, especially if you were doing. Let's go to our third error. If this information is locally generated testimony, without more lesson in 2005, this lesson will be one of our efforts and the monitoring support for the National Education Association and Alaska Federation of Parents, individuals, school districts, and many Alaskan citizens help to establish what those common components were that would ensure the state was meeting its constitutional obligation under the Education Clause. We are to allow more settled in 2012, with the court identifying that the very components we had identified in our 5-year community-based process and the 3 years of litigation are exactly those elements of education our state needed to provide. Increased integrated districts, more consistent curriculum, quality pre-K, among a number of other significant changes. While we received some funding increases and some action, it was not nearly at the same court or plaintiff submission. The documentation, testimony and hearings, the 2016 legislative performance audit, and documentation of school districts that have scored this. So when I first came this year in the Senate, I intended to develop a pre-K bill that ideally would at least implement some of these ideas. That was SB 99 in 2017. Over the next 3 years, I continue to work on that bill and the successor SB 6 each time building on and adding to the prior year's work to help fill the staples of parents, families, teachers, and so many others. In late 2019, I began working with the Commissioner of Education and the Governor to keep expanding the bill to also address the issues of support for need and consistency in reading curriculum. That became the Sponsor Secretary for SB 6. It was pressure introduced by you, Madam Chair, that year, and the balancing process in this committee just prior to the public shutdown. The ideas that were generated by this committee then, and that came out of a robust 7-hearing process on the Senate side that year, are all compiled into this year's SBA in HB 164. The Senate Education Committee has been held 4 times, and there was extensive public support from around the state for those same concepts that was used in hearings. Quality early education and assisting in community responsive reading and grading support to school districts from TV. The Senate Committee then chose to introduce a committee bill, SB 111, in an effort to combine SBA with additional concepts that were in the committee, such as the virtual consortium in SB 42 and the Fulman Report 2. I initially opposed that bill as it did not address the critical issues that have emerged out of the 25-year process that had preceded it, and that were in SBA. But I worked with my colleagues in the Senate. And together we added back nearly all the components of that bill and removed components that were harmful, such as harder ticketing, which was initially in SB 111. While I would make some adjustments to the bill before you, such as removing the sensitive clauses and enhancing the use of locally developed policy management curriculum, I can support the bill that emerged from Senate Education as a natural next step in our effort to build a more robust community-responsive system providing opportunities to craft local policies that reflect local experience and culture, and that provides the support educators, parents, youth, and school districts need to successfully provide a stateless educational opportunity. At the same time that we were working in the Senate, Madam President of Tucker asked this legislation, HB 164, reflecting on this Senate effort. This bill will 4 years to be substituted for HB 164 is the same bill. Was SB 111 built on that quarter of a century effort? HB 164 is informed by the real experience of the Nome School District, OKSB, UConn, Oregon, Polish, and Gateway, and the interaction with several others in responding to this imperative that we provide an adequate and equitable education for all Alaskans. Reflects and identifies the needs and interests of each community and provides the support to the state to get it done. Our kids deserve the less. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you a program committee here on the timeline of this event through distribution to the committee. And I'm going to give you a little bit of an email address and give you a cipher. Thank you, Jane, Representative Tucker. I'm going to ask a question. So thank you.
Senator, that you recommend the sunset clauses. That was my question when this term was presented. I talked about repealer after repealer after repealer. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Particularly, I can see it for the roots of licensing and bachelor degree. But repealing a critically important program like this after working on it for so many years doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But we'll talk about that.
Thank you.
previous meeting to have a more deliberative review of this account. I know that there's been a lot of work that's gone on since we had this bill last year. And I know that the members on the committee that haven't been at all until. I don't know if that's happening this morning or if there's intention to bring this back into that at another point, but it would be an opportunity for us to have that.
Thank you, Representative Cox.
conflict clause. If that is not in there, and this program fails, then you will have to remove it. And there's you're going to put something in the government, you've got it just there forever. So that's my concern. If we put a program in and it doesn't work, how much work is it going to take to get rid of it? There's two things that are discussion on the sunset clause. One of those things is consolidating all of the reporting mechanisms into a single significantly more robust and regular report and virtually annual report to the legislature so that we can retool every year. And it's all on us to do that every single year. And so that process holds. It may take 10 years to find out if something works. You want to know how far this is moving on an annual basis and continue to take some process. So, if the education community, even if version, which we just have been able to this version, felt that was important to work with the Commissioner of Education to develop exact language as you said, Holland, and we developed language that we think will be robust. But secondarily, there is an additional element of this bill that creates members and those parties, that is in the bill, and that will also listen to all the primary members, and that means this whole education report will listen to all. If you create an education report with a sunset date that revokes you back to where you began, you end up losing all that process. There's been discussion about potentially removing the sunset process and even soaking up the review process to review it. But fundamentally, you can't convince people to jump into a process that doesn't, and you can't convince people to jump into a process that doesn't turn out to be a significant investment by them because they won't do it. And if they won't do it, you won't get the robust change you need. So that's the biggest issue here in this process. So if you don't get answers to questions, one of the things that we looked at as well is education should always be ever-evolving. And it's never perfect. We try to be as perfected as possible. Even with the national reports on education just through this pandemic, they're reporting there's a natural divide happening between the lower class and the upper class as far as education opportunities being lost. And that's just the nature of pandemics, the nature of working parents trying to provide for their children's education from home at the same time, trying to make a living. And so it's been very difficult. So we need to have that feedback. That's what this board is doing, is give us that feedback so that we can make changes, we can bring changes along the way, depending on the needs, depending on what we've learned, and depending on $9 over 3 years to implement the same budget. And so we hired him to get that bill in 2014. And only recently have we apologized to everybody who got that bill for the 3 years in town. And so it did something, however, the department continued along with it. And Health and Social Services wanted to take it over. They were trying to protect parents and teachers because we're obviously an education on the chopping board. We've obviously had to either lack of understanding the importance of early education. And as some people look at early education as babysitting, it's not babysitting, it's actually educating our children. And what's nice about parents and teachers is we're not moving, removing the child from the family into an institution or into a classroom. You're basically educating the parent on how to take advantage of the development stages of the child's brain and basically maximizing the learning potential. So that was that came about. I met with Health and Social Services along with Department of Education. When Health and Social Services saw that they were trying to keep and preserve parents as teachers, they realized and said, yes, you should be in youth early development because it really is a teaching program. Although it does have a lot of screenings on it too, which Health and Social Services realized because you get the services provided early, you get better successes, and you save money down the road and off to our lives and everything else. And that's how we implemented for almost going out to social services, but remained in the early education Washington team.
Senator, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to add one other element that's been added to both of these bills, and to give us a few more minutes to make them happen, is actually members of the president, which would be really focused on providing greater resources to parents. Because we had testimony that there were a number of parents who didn't have literacy capacities. Our next legacy of not preventing schools to our rural areas of the state for years until we successfully sued the learning which kids to prevent schooling in rural areas. And when people my age in rural areas, 52% of the men and 38% of the women do not have the opportunity for school in their own basic education in their own. He added a number of components in my career advising parental literacy and came in with the discussion of parents teachers because he felt that they both were very important elements of being self-education on regular.
Thank you, I appreciate that. And
Molly Butcher,
what's missing from the
timeline? Impressive of the timeline, that would be the 50 years of education program. Looking at Section 35 of the Early Intervention Federal on page 24, having heard the bill in effect of three very large components in spending, and you start talking about what exactly it goes in here. In fact, in the Early Intervention Section 35, this is sort of the true gay question. If all gets through that entire section, which how that works, and I'm taking a comment on our end, I think we'd ask for the last year before we're out of time, and I had to recess for the remainder of the calendar year. We're going to get a section of that entire section to the end, and we're looking at how that part works, so we can ask some questions and get some details on it. I will say, Senator, I did see the reference sheet there to Representative Hopkins. We actually have prepared detailed notification for them. We can let the Department of Community about the money today to distribute all the second layers to be issued anyway. So, thanks so much.
My staff is distributing the bills that you have on this right now. I'm not sure that we have to go through that today, but that's a nice level.
I would certainly prefer the section 35 version of that question. Thank you.
reason of new sections in our Alaska Statute 1430. Those sections include Article 15, Leading Intervention Programs. Section 25 directs DEED to support school districts by adopting an evidence-based reading assessment tool or screening tool. This is to help kindergarten through grade 3 classroom teachers identify students who are struggling to learn to read. A student who will be assessed in a poll and is determined to be proficient on learning to read will no longer be assessed in that calendar year, beginning in that school year. If a student is identified to be struggling to read, that individual student will receive an individual reading improvement plan, and that individual reading improvement plan must be developed with data to help the student learn to read. There will be an additional two assessments throughout that school year to ascertain whether the student is actually learning to read and how his or her strategies are being conducted or assisting in ensuring that student is moving proficiently toward reading competency. It is directed to provide training to school district staff in the reading assessment tool and to train school district staff in evidence-based reading interventions. Districts are asked to identify which early education program a student has attended, or if they have attended an early education program, and report to the department in determining reading proficiency as they enter into grades K through 3. Districts may choose to adopt an alternative reading assessment tool as long as it is approved by DEED, or they may use another alternative reading assessment as long as it's evidence-based and approved by DEED. In determining the type of reading assessment tool, DEED must consider the time it will take to administer the assessment. They must determine when the assessment results will be available. They must consider how the assessment will be integrated into the classroom. They must take recommendations from task force about studying reading deficiencies, like the complexity task force. And they must ensure that the assessment is closely responsive.
In terms of what they have to take into account, all those different things, do they have to, kind of minimize the amount of impact in the classroom teaching time? What are the things that they have to take into account? And then using those to implement the remaining assessment.
On line 24 of page 25, there is detailed information regarding how DEED must assess and adopting the student-led trainer assessment tool. And one of those subsections is the intention of minimizing effects on attention time, and also the time it will take to receive assessment reports to ensure that parents, administrators, parents, and guardians have the information in the case.
So just to make sure I understand, the department would be responsible for creating that standardized test for reading across the state. They would have to find a way to incorporate it into the lesson that's been teaching, and then also make sure that it comes back into 25 packet to need to define what the 25 is for to be able to utilize the approval to it.
A great question from the department, because I know many districts already use assessment tools, similar to Ames Web or Duels, Bubbles, and those particular assessment tools have different and similar information that they may provide more information on.
Thank you.
I'd like to give you a couple of snapshots on our baggage. Again, we are moving to section 35. Under section 35, districts are directed to offer assistance to K through 3 grade students who are struggling to read. Assistance must be an individualized reading intervention plan. Those intervention plans must be in addition to core reading instruction and be provided when practical under the supervision of a reading teacher, be rooted in evidence-based methodologies, provide clear and detailed instructions and explanations to the student from their parent or guardian or family member, to be offered outside of the regular school day in addition to classroom interactions as well. Those detailed individual interventions and guidance plans must also provide assistance and support to parent guardians also provide additional opportunities for parents and families to learn about resources for adult literacy. Individual reading improvement plans must be implemented within 30 days of student being identified as a strong learner, and they must be developed in conjunction with the state's classroom teacher and district support. Progress on individual reading improvement plans must be closely responsive and be monitored so that adjustments can be made when necessary. Key components of Section 35 require that parent-friendly examiners be updated on the progress of their students and provided additional resources that they can implement at home. Once a student is identified to be a struggling reader, the family member must be notified within 15 days. That notification, whether it's written or verbal, must provide a clear description of what an individual reading plan entails, thus explain how the district plans to support the student. It must also provide opportunities for a parent to be involved in the conversation, and it must be explained what evidence-based reading strategies could be implemented at home and provide a detailed explanation of what future retention or prevention options may be entailed by the classroom teacher, the parent, and the district staff.
We're going to talk about that type of experience in my life, but when we have an individual education plan, which is the specialist education plan for the student, the parent is always required to be there and they have to accommodate the schedule for the parent. What happens in these cases is the parent will probably get a grandparent or person who's in charge of that student too, is not able to be part of the meetings, not able to be there.
The definition of parent learning is very inclusive in this piece of legislation, with the hope that a family member will be able to be participated in those conversations. If a family member is unable to be present, there will be conversations with the classroom teacher and the district staff.
So, if the parent can't be there, they're not trying to read to make sure that the parent is able to make sure that the parent and the not confidential. They're not able to be there, they still continue to work with the take the and then there's a chance for the requirement that the parent makes herself at some point to sign off on something that is something. So, do you like to use the usual education plan? Or is it just the parent before?
Does that mean that existing that staff to retool and go back in to reevaluate their corrections, which maybe they did not review anyway. But can you speak to that?
Dr. Kishwara-Sikorsky, this legislation holds healthcare programs at the current state of the PR meeting with their include them from a particular regard. It does encourage districts to work with their existing education programs to make sure that all students have the opportunity to attend early education programs. It says that it does have minimum threshold for family, I'm giving you a word that I'm forgetting here. Their effort is in the use of lower incomes in order to get every student in every community has the opportunity to attend early education program. This particular position ensures that you have both for next and conception in order to get tested.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just in a follow up to the grant of proceeding that Ontario Hopkins was FDA in Section 35, with respect to supporting the supporting the administration of screening tools and assessments, can you speak to how DEET would provide that support for teachers conducting assessments? And I think about that in the context of teachers on the ground in the classroom. But this actually is directing that the department would provide that support. Can you speak to how that would be intention of that support would be?
Thank you, Chair Representative Kowski. I believe that we established a bit of the rules for academic reduction as a department.
Thank you.
About this. Now, as we know, this is a high priority for all legislators that actually are doing well working and bringing in this such a foundational skill because, as Rep. Tech said, if you're not reading well, then those reading problems when you're going out and for the grade to learn about science and other subjects, which is kind of slightly to gain a grasp in it because you don't have boost of reading down. So, it's definitely a focus. And it's just going to go back and not a lot of work to do, just kind of stand with components and where we're going to spend some time on. And part of the components we'd like to know is more about, like when we go, but just that moving from having retention to parents. But I'd like to know how that is because it really is so important that we have so many families who are like growing and follow their students' education. And so that's what we're going to do. I'm not doing it on the street here. And then, of course, we will be taking in the testimony from our educators and hearing their thoughts on the bill in the industry as we go along. So, I really think this is a point where there's some urgency around it because we've been ready to move on this and helping kids with their board reading for quite some time. So, I'm hoping we'll be able to put some good attention to this.
Yes. Good morning, Dr. Drummond. good to restore the members of the committee. My name is Savannah Eaker. I'm Executive Director for the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education and Executive Officer for the Alaska Scale 1 Corporation. And this morning, thank you for providing me with the opportunity to introduce you to the governors. Bill has been with 14. After getting to the education loan program, and I'll leave the supplemental education loans. First, I would like to quickly and briefly go over the missions of the corporation and the Commission on Post-Secondary Education. The Alaska Commission supports Alaskans' access to and success in post-secondary education and career training after high school. The Alaska Scale 1 Corporation operates as an enterprise agency of the state of Alaska, funding and facilitating the Alaska Scale 1 program and the related work of the Alaska Commission in post-secondary education. The dean, as I said, House Bill 114 relates to the education loan programs. First of all, I will give you sort of a quick sectional analysis. There are really three changes, major amendments, that this bill provides. The proposed change amends AS 1443-122-80, which is the section which is consolidation of loans, which is referred to really as Alaska Refinance Loan Programs. This section expands the population eligible to apply for the Alaska Refinancing Loans to include previous Alaska borrowers and graduates from Alaska high schools and post-secondary institutions, as well as current Alaska residents. So currently, the refinance program, which the legislature approved about 4 years ago, is open and eligible only to current Alaska residents. And the refinance program is for students that have arrived in school no longer, they graduated, or they're no longer in school and they're about working. So the current you're asking was a bill to expand the proposed pool of eligibility for this to include previous borrowers, co-founders, or beneficiaries that have an Alaska loan, but do may no longer be Alaska residents and have moved out of state. If they were, they do currently have Alaska student loan. And also, the other expansion that we're requesting is for to provide Alaska high school or post-secondary institution graduates. So graduates of institutions in Alaska that, again, are no longer currently Alaska residents, but they still have a nexus to the state of Alaska and they moved out of state for a number of reasons. But we are asking that they will also have the opportunity to participate in the Alaska Refinance Loan Program. Sections 2, 3, and 4 all are related to loan award maximums. And Section 2 removes the annual loan margin statute, currently a specified numeric limit statute. We're asking to remove the lifetime maximum from statute. And instead of having the actual amounts in statute, we are asking that the corporation board have the flexibility to set annual or lifetime limits for both half-time and full-time loans. The next change is Section 5. Amends repayment of loans. We're asking that with this, we are asking for clarification. Current statutes are not clear on whether we could propose that new borrowers for the Alaska student
Thank you. first hour of the state agency and not for profit, the state local bids are in the country. They have previous wood tax exempt abundance, like the SLCS could only be more or less in the past. We create a layer 2 website for borrowers to be able to grant the standard level of everybody's borrower's residency. The current legislation of already has that as one nexus, so allowing a borrower to become eligible. But the other way, it's not common in all programs around the country, with only one exception that in the world besides Alaska, is to establish nexus and eligibility by having attended school within the state. And this provision would add that additional nexus, having attended school. It would expand the borrower pool, within the last student loan refinance program somewhat. It's not likely to be a real large expansion of the program. I would also point out that it's not exactly what this has already mentioned. This is limited to refinance loans. These are not borrowers that are in school. These are people that are predominantly graduated or otherwise terminated their program. They're in the marketplace. They have jobs. They have income. And in many cases, they have quite substantial FICO scores. So this expansion would not represent any kind of expanded credit risk of the program. Now, back to the program, raise the overall credit profile of the program if you include both residents and school. So this is a positive potential expansion of the pool that has benefits for both the program in terms of increased credit quality, offsetting the decline in the corporation's existing loan portfolio by an expanded pool, and it has benefit for borrowers in Alaska or that's in school in Alaska. The second provision, most of the student companies we are financial advisor to have the governing body of the program set the loan limits. There's only one other program in the country that involves where the loan limits are established in the legislation authorizing the program, and that's the state of Texas. And there's a reason for that. In Texas, the student loan bonds issued by the Texas Higher Education Funding Board, there are general obligations of the state of Texas secured by the full faith and credit of the state. Everywhere else, including in Alaska, the debt issued by the student loan corporation is the state loan revenue debt. It's secured only by the loans themselves. So this would bring the Alaska program into line with the other programs around the country that would have been rather to I would stress it does not eliminate loan limits. It simply puts the ability to set those limits at the governing body level, which allows the program to be more responsive to changes in the cost of education and borrower needs. The third and final provision, as already been mentioned, is very positive. There are a number of state agency and government C3 programs around the country that began experimenting with offering an immediate payment option that is optional in every case that I'm aware of. And what we've found, historically speaking, since those experiments began a number of years ago, is that it dramatically improves repayment performance and lowers delinquency and default. Borrowers that take advantage of this immediate repayment option will only generate a lower borrowing cost of funding money by eliminating the capitalization feature that's shown on the screen. But they prefer it better than loans that don't exercise or take advantage of the immediate repayment option but wait until 6 months after graduation. That's the extent of my comments. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Questions for
Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Donner, for making yourself available this morning. With that, we are going to hold this bill for further consideration. Thank you very much for bearing with us through the confusion this morning.
I have one more. I just also want to commend that this bill hasn't seen much of a merit because it would help our counties as well, actually, for operating Sunday, putting on the outcomes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Zerflush. I'm going to take a quick time to visit our next bill. The other sponsor of the legislation is not
to encourage the support of women and continuing to have opportunities in a fellowship class and helping them bring this bill.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Good speaking of sponsor of Hospital 108, and he is working with districts and trying to get some more information to understand that this one is going to be. So, I just wanted to share that I'm going to be talking to you.
Discussion with the Secretary of Police, call the roll. Thank you.